ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नारं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 17, titled The Descent of the River Ganges. We are going to read from text 17 to text 20. Text 17. Text 17 and text 18 have no purports. Text 19 has a small purport and text 20 also has a small purport. So I have to speak on text 19 and 20. But I'll read from 17 onwards along with the translations. 17 is a prose. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya Sarvagura Sarvaguna Sankhya Nay Anantaya Vyaktaya Nama Iti. Translation. The most powerful Lord Shiva says, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you in your expansion as Lord Sankarsana. You are the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. Although you are unlimited, you remain unmanifest to the non-devotees. Text 18. Bhaje bhajan yarana pada pankajam bhagasya krishnasya paramparayanam bhakteshva alam bhavita bhuta bhavanam bhava paham tva bhava bhava ishwaram bhava bhavam ishwaram. Translation. O my Lord, you are the only worshipable person, for you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all opulences. Your secure lotus feet are the only source of protection for all your devotees, whom you satisfy by manifesting yourself in various forms. O my Lord, you deliver your devotees from the clutches of material existence. Non-devotees, however, remain entangled in material existence by your will. Kindly accept me as your eternal servant. Text 19. Nayasya maya guna chitta vritti bir nirikshato hi anva api drishti rajyate isheyatano ajitamanyu ramhasam kamtam namanyeta jigishur atmanaha. Translation. We cannot control the force of our anger. Therefore, when we look at material things, we cannot avoid feeling attraction or repulsion for them. But the Supreme Lord is never affected in this way. Although he glances over the material world for the purpose of creating, maintaining and destroying it, he is not affected even to the slightest degree. Therefore, one who desires to conquer the forces of the senses must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Then he will be victorious. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always equipped with inconceivable potencies. Although creation takes place by his glancing over the material energy, he is not affected by the modes of material nature. Because of his eternally transcendental position,
when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in this material world, the modes of material nature cannot affect him. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is called transcendence, and anyone who wants to be secure from the influence of the modes of material nature must take shelter of him. Text 20. Asadrisho ya pratibati mayaya shibeva madhu madva aswa tamra lochanaha nanagavadvo rahana ishire hriya yatpadayo sparshana darshitendriyaha. You can repeat word for word. Asadrishaha. For a person with polluted vision, yaha, who, pratibhati, appears, mayaya, the influence of maya, kshibaha, one who is inebriated or angry, eva, like, madhu, by honey, asava, and liquor, tamra lochanaha, having eyes reddish like copper, na, not, naga vadvaha, the wives of the serpent demon, arhane, in worshipping, ishire, were unable to proceed, hriya, because of bashfulness, yat padayo, of whose lotus feet, sparshana, by the touching, darshita, agitated, indriya, whose senses. Translation. For persons with impure vision, the Supreme Lord's eyes appear like those of someone who indiscriminately drinks intoxicating beverages. Thus bewildered, such unintelligent persons become angry at the Supreme Lord, and due to their angry mood, the Lord himself appears angry and very fearful. However, this is an illusion. When the wives of the serpent demon were agitated by the touch of the Lord's lotus feet, due to shyness, they could proceed no further in their worship of him. Yet the Lord remained unagitated by their touch, for he is equipoised in all circumstances. Therefore, who will not worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Purport. Anyone who remains unagitated, even in the presence of cause for agitation, is called dhira or equipoised. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being always in a transcendental position, is never agitated by anything. Therefore, someone who wants to become dhira must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 2.13, Krishna says, Dhirastatra na muhyati. A person who is equipoised in all circumstances is never bewildered. Prahlad Maharaj is a perfect example of a dhira. When the fierce form of Narasimhadev appeared in order to kill Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad was unagitated. He remained calm and quiet, whereas others, including even Lord Brahma, were frightened by the features of the Lord. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadama Hyam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Jayapataka Swami Tinamine Namah Acharya Padaya Nitai Kripa Pradayine Gaurakata Dhamadaya Nagaragrama Tharine Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Gopi Parana Dhanadasi Tinamine Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasadi Kaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yatkripatamaham Bande Shri Gurunatarinam Yatkripatamaham Bande Paramananda Madhavam Shri Chaitanya Ishwaram Katanchana Smrite Yasmin Dushkaram Sakaram Bhavet Vismrite Viparitam Syat Shri Chaitanyam Namamitam. So here we have in this chapter here Lord Shiva is glorifying the Supreme Lord. Here in this particular shloka that we are reading today, he is glorifying how the Lord is the perfect example of a dhira, and his lotus feet are the only source of protection for all devotees. This word dhira is something which appears repeatedly throughout scripture, and as Prabhupada explains here, anyone who remains unagitated even in the presence of cause for agitation is called dhira or equipoised. Now in this shloka Prabhupada, in this purport, he quotes the 13th verse of the second chapter, Dehinosmin Yata Dehe, that particular verse where the word Dhirastatra Muhyati, we all know that verse, which is the one of the first verses we learned. Dehinosmin Yata Dehe Kaumaram Yavanam Jara Tatah Deantara Prati Dhirastatrana Muhyati. So Prabhupada, in the purport to that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, any man who has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the super soul and nature, and Prabhupada mentions both material and spiritual, is called a dhira or a most sober man. Such a man is never deluded by the change of bodies, because normally the concept of change of body, death, is something which can be very bewildering. So the word dhira refers to a person who knows actually what is reality, what is material nature, what is spiritual nature, what is the individual soul, what is the supreme soul. So unless one is situated in that, on that platform of perfect knowledge, one can tend to be bewildered, especially by death. So the word dhira is used in the context of somebody who is not bewildered by change of body. So this word dhira is used in several different contexts. So here we find the context of not being bewildered by change of body. Then Prabhupada also explains in the Bhagavatam, in other places, that dhira also refers to one who is in material life. There are many disturbances: adhyatmika, adhidevika and adhibhautika. One who has learned to tolerate these disturbances under all circumstances is called a dhira. So we know the adhyatmika miseries caused by the mind and senses, which I'll take up a little later. And then we have adhidevika, which is miseries caused by the demigods or miseries caused by material nature. One classic example of being undisturbed is Prabhupada's life before he left to preach in the West. So we are now in the middle of summer. It's scorching summer, although the last 2 days have been pleasant. So Prabhupada, in one such summer, he was trying to print his books. And once, due to the intense sun, he was struck by a sunstroke, and he was lying unconscious on the street. But nevertheless, Prabhupada was undisturbed in the discharge of his duty. That's a very that's a classic example of being a dhira in circumstances caused by Adi Devika elements. Then you have Adi Bhautika. And again, Prabhupada, we have a classic example where when he was a child, of course you could say war is both a combination of Adi Bhautika and Adi Devika, because Prabhupada says that when you become very sinful, then material nature causes you to have war. So it's a combination of both Adi Devika and Adi Bhautika. Adi Bhautika means the other living entities. So Prabhupada is explaining how during the World War, Calcutta was being bombed. And Prabhupada explains how does bombs are raining, he said. And Prabhupada said, I thought, no, why should I leave this home? I'll just be home. Krishna will take care. Krishna is coming. So normally, war is a time when people panic. It's the time of people are extremely disturbed and anxious during the time of a war. And Prabhupada laughs about it and says that I was just thinking Krishna is coming and I didn't want to go out of home, although it was raining bombs. So that's an example of being undisturbed in the face of Adi Bhautika miseries. Then Adhyatmika. This is a subject which is very important for all practitioners of all yoga systems, including Bhakti Yoga. So the concept of Adhyatmika, how to tolerate the urges of the mind and senses, is dealt with elaborately by Rupa Goswami in his Upadeshamrita. The very first verse of the Upadeshamrita, Vacho Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam Jihva Vegam Udaropasta Vegam Etan Vegan Yog Vishaheta Dhiraha Sarvam Apimam Prithvim Yashishyad. So Rupa Goswami says, Prabhupada explains that there are six agitating elephants as far as the Adhyatmika disturbances are concerned. There are six agitating agents. Prabhupada uses the expression agitating agents. So the first one is Jihva Vegam, Vacha Vegam, Vacha Vegam, which means the urge to talk. Then you have the agitations of the mind, Krodha, agitations of anger. Then you have agitations of the tongue, belly, and genitals. In his purport to this verse, Prabhupada quotes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Chakur, and he explains that these six agitating agents can be classified into three categories: the urge to talk, mind and anger can be classified as the urges of the mind, and the last three, the urges of the tongue, belly and genitals can be considered as the urges of the body. So the three categories, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Chakur, in his commentary on the same verse of the Upadeshamrita, he classifies these six agitating agents into three, which are the urge to speak, the urges of the mind and the urges of the body. Now, in reference to the urge to speak, we all know that the world, materials, especially modern civilization, is filled with news. Media is one of the most prominent elements of modern civilization. And Prabhupada said, this is all just useless talk. And just gossip. I mean, about what's going on. I mean, not always gossip, but predominantly, you have political news, you have economic development, you have sports, and then you have all the what all the film stars are doing, what all the models are doing. The paparazzi is very active, the tabloids. Anyway, so the whole point is, Prabhupada explains, this is modern civilization is very active in speaking all kinds of nonsense. And Prabhupada compares this to the croaking of the toad, frogs, like especially when it begins to rain, we can see that you have all the frogs and the toads croaking. In fact, in Mayapur, you almost have like an orchestra of frogs and toads croaking during the rainy season. And Prabhupada explains that the croaking of the toad means it is inviting the snake, please come and eat me. So like that, Prabhupada explains that this unnecessary talk, simply about all these political, nothing about the real goal of human life, simply political talk and all these sports and economic development, it is inviting the snake of death to come and catch. The snake of, yes, death, when we talk unnecessarily. And so Prabhupada explains, it's a very, very important, it's a very simple sentence, but a very profound sentence. He says, we should always endeavor to use our speaking power solely for the purpose of realizing Krishna consciousness. So it's a very, very simple guideline. When we talk, if that talk helps us to realize Krishna consciousness, then we are properly using our speaking power. It's very, very simple. You have a conversation with somebody, and if that conversation helps you to realize Krishna consciousness, then that is definitely proper use of the speaking power. So Prabhupada puts in a very simple sentence, we should always endeavor to use our speaking power solely for the purpose of realizing Krishna consciousness. So it's a very simple test. We talk to, I mean, because talking is some of the most strongest urges, so we like to talk. So the moment we talk to somebody, we can test whether that talking was really Krishna consciousness or not by seeing whether it has helped us to realize Krishna consciousness. This is a very, very simple test. Then, as far as the mind is concerned, Prabhupada explains the nature of the mind is generally very restless. And that restlessness is caused because we hear the plans that are created by the materialists. The materialists are always interested in telling us how wonderful this material world is. Right? So then they make various plans. So when we hear those plans, we develop a desire to head in the direction of that plan. And so the moment we develop such a desire, immediately the mind becomes restless. And so that is what is referred to as the urges of the mind. And then what happens when those desires are not fulfilled? That results in anger. So the urges of the mind and anger are related. The frustration of desire, Prabhupada explains, causes anger. And this is more elaborately explained by Krishna in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, verses 63 and 64, where he says, by contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops a desire. Desire leads to attachment or lust. And when lust is frustrated, then one develops anger. And when one becomes angry, then that results in loss of memory. Sorry, it results in bewilderment. And bewilderment leads to loss of memory. And loss of memory leads to destruction of intelligence, which causes to lead to the fall into the samsara. Which actually means, what does it all mean? It means that, for example, when there is lust and we are not able to fulfill that material desire, then immediately we become angry. And when we become angry, what happens is we lose the sense of discrimination of what is to be done and what is not to be done. That is the exact meaning of the expression sammoha. Sammoha means you bewilderment. You get bewildered. What is to be, you lose a sense of discrimination when you become angry. What is to be done? What is not to be done? And then what happens when you lose your sense of discrimination? Then you forget. Loss of memory means you forget what is actually beneficial to you according to scriptural injunctions. That's the meaning of loss of memory, which means we lose memory of what is beneficial to us according to scriptures. And when we lose memory, then buddhinashaha. Smriti vibramaha is called loss of memory. Then because of which buddhinasha. Buddhinasha means destruction of intelligence, which is explained as we lose our determination to practice spiritual life. And when we lose our determination to practice spiritual life, we fall into material life. Therefore, Prabhupada always warns us of being very careful of associating with non-devotees, of hearing from non-devotees. It is not that the world is very nice. I mean, it is not that the world, in general, people are very nice. We just have to give them Krishna consciousness. No. Prabhupada makes it very, very clear that this word dhira applies to people who can understand this, that this dhirastatra namuyati, this change of body. And Prabhupada says only a dhira can understand this. And he says, not these busy dogs. So that's what Prabhupada says. So only the dhiras can understand this concept of change of body, not the busy dogs. So Prabhupada is very fond of using this expression, the deluxe edition of animal life, cats and dogs. This is in fact coming from the Bhagavatam itself, where you have people who are not engaged in Krishna consciousness being compared to dogs, hogs, camels and asses. And Prabhupada, by presenting that to us as it is, that is an act of compassion. Because unless we understand what is reality, how can we act? And Prabhupada has presented reality to us uncompromisingly. It is not that he is harsh. It is not that he is rude. So when he uses the expression rascal, for example, when speaking about this word dhira, Prabhupada says, to understand these concepts, one should be dhira. One should have brain substance. In one lecture he says this, one should have brain substance, not cow dung in the brain, he says. And another lecture, he says that one should have brain substance, not stool substance. So Prabhupada is very strong because he wants us to understand that this is material life, this is modern civilization, that it's simply a deluxe edition of a cat and dog's life. So if we are to be really compassionate to them, we should first of all understand what is their position. Then we can be genuinely compassionate. And if we do not listen to the words of Prabhupada, if we do not have faith in those words, then we begin to become attracted by people in this modern civilization. And the moment we begin to appreciate them, immediately we are on the path of bewilderment, smriti vibramaha, buddhinasha. We just started that path. So we should be very, very careful. So it is deliberate that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, they are very, very strong in presenting material reality to us. Om Agyana Timirandasya. The material world is a dark place. So they are showing it to us. It is very, very dark. You have to be careful. So it is an act of compassion that Prabhupada is speaking very, very strongly about dogs and hogs and camels and asses and things like that. Sometimes people get offended. Why is Prabhupada using such strong language? But it is simply out of his compassion. And we have to understand. Prabhupada says that does not mean that when we meet people, we call them dogs and asses. And that's not what it is. Prabhupada says that because we are gentlemen, we give you respect. But we have to understand what is their position. Otherwise, if you don't understand what is their position, where is the desire? Where is the compassion to help them? So, as gentlemen, we give them respect. But we have to understand, this is the reality. This is the position of modern civilization. And we have to deal with them respectfully. but we have to understand what the situation and try to help them. At the same time, so unless we have that vision very clear, we can ourselves fall down into Maya. And then you have, so these are the urges of the mind and anger. And of course, Prabhupada explains in the purport to Upadesha Amrita that this is one kind of anger, frustration of material desires. And Prabhupada also explains that anger is not something that can be negated fully. It cannot be, he says. But it can be controlled. And then Prabhupada gives the example that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya, he became very angry with Jagai and Madai. So, Prabhupada says, we may think that Lord Chaitanya teaches us Trinadapi Sunichena Taroravi Sahishnuna. So, how is it that Lord Chaitanya becomes angry? So, Prabhupada explains that Lord Chaitanya did not become angry for himself because he was insulted, but became angry because Lord Nityananda was insulted. And then Prabhupada explains, any genuine devotee, becomes angry when the Lord or the Lord's devotees are blasphemed. And then Prabhupada gives the example of Hanuman, how he was angry, and with his anger he burnt Lanka, Sri Lanka. And then Prabhupada also gives the example of Arjuna. After hearing the Bhagavad Gita from Krishna, Arjuna fought the war very valiantly. And Prabhupada says, without being angry, you cannot fight. So that's another example. So there is anger that is produced out of material frustration, and there is anger that is generated when you see the Lord's devotees or the Lord being blasphemed. And that kind of anger is considered glorious. Then you have the urges of the body, which are the tongue, belly and genital. The first urge of the tongue was the Vachavegam, which we already dealt with. Now, in terms of tasting, so Prabhupada explains that the tongue, the belly and the genitals are in the same straight line. So if you can control the tongue, control eating, then you can control your belly and also your genitals. And as far as eating is concerned, Prabhupada says, controlling the tongue means one should take the vow of eating only Krishna Prasadam. And also Prabhupada says, one should avoid restaurants. Restaurants means, of course, he means karmi restaurants. And eating at sweet meat shops. I remember that during the days that I joined Krishna consciousness, eating sweets from a sweet shop is not considered acceptable. But over the years I've noticed that now it's kind of generally accepted that you can buy sweets from a sweet meat shop and offer it to Krishna. But however, Prabhupada is speaking very strongly in the Upadesha Amrita, which he says in the preface is the first instruction for neophytes. So there he mentions very strongly that this concept of buying food not cooked by devotees is just not acceptable. Prasada means that which is cooked for the pleasure of the Lord. And that includes, Prabhupada, right in the very early days, he made it very clear that this store-bought ice cream is Maya. So once, Prabhupada is giving a lecture, this is in the early days, and there is an ice cream truck which is passing by with the bells. So Prabhupada asks, what is that bell? And since the devotees said, oh, this is an ice cream truck going outside on the road. Prabhupada said, oh, this ice cream means Maya. And then he interrupted his lecture and began to explain how, just like the fish is caught by throwing a bait, so it gets stuck in the bait and it gets killed. So Prabhupada says, so Maya is announcing you with these bells. Come, I'll capture you. So this ice cream is trying to capture you. So Prabhupada's standard was, whatever is not cooked with devotion is not prasadam. And whatever is not cooked with devotion, not offered to the Lord, is not prasadam. So that is what it means to control the tongue. And Prabhupada said, a symptom of not being able to control the belly is that you have a lot of stomach problems. In general, if you have a lot of stomach problems, that means you're not controlling your belly. And then he says that about genitals, he said that if you can control these two, then you can also control your genitals. And in reference to this particular word, dhira, throughout his books and lectures, Prabhupada gives the example of Lord Shiva. After Sati killed herself, Lord Shiva was very disturbed by Sati's death. So he left and he was practicing meditation. At that time, Sati's reincarnation as Parvati. So the demons and demigods were fighting when Lord Shiva was meditating. And they wanted a powerful son who could be born through the union of Lord Shiva and Parvati. So then they sent Parvati for this purpose. And Prabhupada mentions that so Parvati worshipped the genital of Lord Shiva, and she even touched his genitals. Nevertheless, Lord Shiva was undisturbed. And he says, this is an example of Dhira. Similarly, he says that Haridas Thakur, just like when the prostitute came to disturb him, he was undisturbed. He was also tested by Maya Devi. So the Prabhupada says that is an example of being a Dhira, who is completely undisturbed. So, that's what it means to control the urges of the body. And as far as using the genitals, Prabhupada says that if one wants, the only purpose of using the genitals is to beget Krishna conscious children, not otherwise. That Prabhupada makes it very, very clear. And also, we know that Prabhupada taught us that as far as the demands of the body are concerned, ultimately, due to our practice of Krishna consciousness, we have to come to a stage where Prabhupada says, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, these become nil. Prabhupada says, this becomes nil. Oh, well, that's very interesting. That eating, sleeping, mating and defending becomes nil. And so generally we know that, okay, prasadam, no problem. That's the only luxury that we're allowed. But in the very first verse of the Upadeshamrita, Prabhupada explains that, however, if one accepts prasada only because of its palatable taste and thus eats too much, he also falls prey to trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us to avoid very palatable dishes even while eating prasada. If we offer palatable dishes to the deity with the intention of eating such nice food, we are involved in trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. Now this may appear very strong, but this is in the very first verse of the Upadeshamrita. It's in the purport, which Prabhupada says is the preliminary instruction for neophytes. So, what we observe is, even if we are not on that platform, at least we should know, this is the point. Just like Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so happy with him, seeing his renunciation, where he would eat the leftover food of Lord Jagannath at Puri. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy he would eat from his hand. He said, what is this nectar that you're tasting? So he was very impressed with Raghunath Das Goswami. So someday, we have to aspire to come to that stage where eating, sleeping, mating, defending becomes nil. So, Prabhupada explains, so how does one do all these things? Prabhupada explains that one can become a dhira only by submissively hearing from a bona fide spiritual master. Arjuna, for example, became a dhira by submissively hearing from Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead himself. Thus, the perfect disciple must be like Arjuna, and the spiritual master must be as good as the Lord himself. This is the process of learning vidya, knowledge, from the dhira, the undisturbed. So Prabhupada explains, this, the secret of becoming dhira is, one can become a dhira only by submissively hearing from a bona fide spiritual master. That is the secret. So you see that Arjuna, after hearing the Bhagavad Gita, he hears the whole Bhagavad Gita, and finally what does he conclude? Karishye vachanam tava. Whatever you say, I will do. So he comes to that point of fully accepting what Krishna is saying and fully executing that order of Krishna. So, this is the process that we have to adopt. Submissively hear what? Submissively hear the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as presented by Rupa Goswami, which has been explained to us by Srila Prabhupada. We recite the shloka, Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadama Hyam Dadati Swapadantikam. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam, which means the mind's desires of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been understood by Rupa Goswami. The philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been understood fully by Rupa Goswami, and he has presented that to us, and which has been explained for us in the modern age by Srila Prabhupada. So when we say submissively hear, it means that first of all, one has to submissively hear the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented by Rupa Goswami as explained to us by Srila Prabhupada. So we have to be dedicated to the process of being submissively hearing to Srila Prabhupada's books, submissively hearing his message that is presented in his books. Because the message of Rupa Goswami is very different from the message of generally what people understand to be bhakti. Because bhakti is performed by people, especially in India, for various reasons, generally for material benefits. But the kind of bhakti that Rupa Goswami is recommending is different. He's talking about Uttama Bhakti, which is about Anya Abhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavritam Anukuliyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Ruttamaha. So that kind of bhakti, which is only to the only, where one has the only desire to serve the Lord, that has been presented by Rupa Goswami, that is explained by Srila Prabhupada. So when we say bhakti, it is not just all about love. Yes, the love is the final stage when we attain the full perfection of Krishna consciousness. So in the name of being nice, in the name of being in the name of love, we cannot forget, this is the first instruction, that we have to control our senses. Prabhupada says the first principle of any yoga process is to control the senses. So this whole process, this whole book, Nectar of Instruction, I think it was either Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur or Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who writes that the first 7 verses of the Upadeshamrita refer to the process of Vaidhi Bhakti. The 8th verse refers to Raganuga Bhakti, and 9, 10, 11 refers to Prema Bhakti. So when Prabhupada was asked, what about bathing in Radha Kunda? So Prabhupada replied, first do the first 8, then you can do the 9, 10, 11. So this is a very, very important book to us, because Prabhupada often says Krishna consciousness is a very scientific process. So when you say scientific process, very, very clearly explained. First of all, one has to become a dhira. So like that, the whole progress, the whole process of Vaidhi Bhakti is very clearly enunciated in Nectar of Instruction. And being a follower of Prabhupada means that we are devoted to understand what he is trying to say and try to implement them. Just like Krishna, Prabhupada says, submissively hearing means like Arjuna. Arjuna accepts whatever Krishna says and he acts on that instruction of Krishna. So we have to come to that stage where, I mean, at least first of all, we would accept whatever Prabhupada explains, and we should also carry out that, whatever he says. Then one can be situated on the platform of Dhira. And Prabhupada explains, I'll end with that, where you may think, okay, Dhira, is it all about controlling the senses? Prabhupada says, Dhira means they're always peaceful and thinking of Krishna. Because if you are peaceful, you can always think of Krishna. And Prabhupada gives the example, it's like if this Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hi Andhakara. So whenever Krishna is like the sun and Maya is like darkness. So when the sun of Krishna arises in the mind, it dissipates the fog of distress. So by the fog of darkness. So by the process of practicing Krishna consciousness, as explained to us by Prabhupada, then one becomes dhira. When one becomes sober, Prabhupada says sober means, the dhira means cool-headed, gentleman, so many different expressions he uses. So one becomes all this and one becomes happy in Krishna consciousness. So since this verse was referring to the whole explanation is about being dhira, how the Lord is a perfect example of dhira and how we have to also become dhira. And one particular example here is Prahlad Maharaj. It says that Lord Narasimhadev was so fierce that even Lord Brahma was afraid to approach Narasimhadev. But Prahlad Maharaj was very calm and quiet. And that's an example of dhira. So the word dhira generally means one who is not disturbed even among provocative circumstances. And it can be applied in different contexts about being undisturbed. So I think I'll stop there if there are any comments or questions. Yes, Bhaji. Mike? Okay.
Thank you very much. Nice class. Thank you for reminding me about sense control. I just want to ask the question that in my devotional life often, you know, we hear this famous story of the Lord Buddha. Too tight. Or
the story goes the men.
Lord Buddha was meditating. He heard the master musician tell the student, "Don't wind the instrument too tight." So, you know, when you make a statement like, "We have to reduce our eating, sleeping, and mating to nil," so. I appreciate that. It's a nice statement, and I wish I could, you know. But I always think, you know, my mating has been reduced to nil.
Pardon?
It has been reduced to nil. It's nil.
So you know, you have to enjoy the
world a little bit. It seems to me, enjoyment has got to be there. Some enjoyment, some food. Something, some little something has to be there. So otherwise, I think you wind the instrument too tight and there could be, danger in that path. So I love these about sense control. And I'm not trying to recruit them. I'm just, how do we now walk instrument too tight, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that we should not act on a platform which is beyond our ability. So Prabhupada explains that elaborately in when his sannyasis fell, he said it's better to remain Maya, better to remain in household life and fight Maya. Because in that position, at least one has strength to fight Maya. So one should be careful that one should not, Prabhupada said you cannot imitate Raghunath Das Goswami or Haridas Thakur. So that has to come very naturally. So even this question of ultimately even giving up eating, we may not be on that level yet. But by the progress of devotional service, we may be able to see that Prabhupada says that is a test that as we progress, slowly, one by one, these are falling apart. It's going away. And eventually, right now we may need some happiness from these things, but as Prabhupada explains, just like the six Goswamis, he explains very elaborately that Gopi Bhavara Samritab Dilahari Kallola Magno Muhu, which means they were Gopi Bhavara Samritab Dilahari, which they were completely absorbed in the mood of the Gopis, Kallola Magno Muhu, One Day Rupa Sanatana. I mean, they were so much absorbed in the mood of the Gopis, that is their only. They were deriving so much happiness from that absorption. They would just wander around, run around in the forests of Vrindavan, searching where is Krishna, where is Radha. So that is the highest perfection, where one is completely beyond the need to derive some kind of happiness from the senses. But it has to happen as a gradual process, because quite often when we try to imitate, then we fall down. Just like Prabhupada, he would sleep only a few hours. But if we try to do that, our chanting is going to get disturbed. So many other things are going to get disturbed. So it happens as a natural progression. So I really appreciate your point that we should not wind things too tight. But we should try to push the bar constantly as much as possible. Should try to test the waters. Yes.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.